Of course, time to welcome Eric Hasseltine to the program, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network, play-by-play announcer. He's on Twitter at Eric Hasseltine, although I believe for the sake of his own brain, I think he just like deleted the app. But how are you, buddy?
You talking about Twitter?
Yeah, didn't you delete it?
That app? No, I haven't deleted it. I'm still there. I still reply to some messages.
Okay.
People say kind things, but, you know, yeah, there's not a lot of that on Twitter. It's nice, you know, and then you go on shows other places and they say, hey, check this out. And it's amazing. I'll look one day and, you know, we'll do a game or I'll do an interview with somebody and I'm not trying to sound like I'm in high demand. I'm not. I'm very available. But I'll get like...
No, you do this show,
followers.
So I would say you're very much available.
No, yeah. Dude, I've always got... Bro, I cleared my schedule for you. Come on now.
All right,
I got a guy here hooking up my entertainment center and all these fun things, making sure I got my theater screen working for tonight's big games. Going to watch some basketball on the really, really big screen. So it's the new house is a little different setup than the old house. We couldn't do the four TVs.
I was going to ask, do you still have the divider where you can do the 4-in-1?
It's better, though. It's better. So the new house, they left a theater screen and a projector in there, but it's a little bit older. But thanks to the good folks at Black Tie Moving, we had a nice little quarter. And so I am investing in a new projector that has a top-of-the-line picture coming with it.
Well, I think Jaren could probably invest in whatever he wants. What did you make of the deal when you saw it done?
I thought it was good for both sides. I think, you know, it's obvious that, you know, if you're Jaren, you would have loved to got the Luka Doncic max out, all that other stuff. But obviously you don't reach the things he's done. And for Jaren to get that contract, one, you know, there's obviously, it's in between what the John Collins and Luka Doncic deals. And
yeah,
Collins was a little bit lower, but it was kind of approved to me. And there's a little essence of, you know, the front office saying, hey, we believe in you, but you still, you have to prove it a little bit too. You have to stay healthy. And I still contend people make more of his rookie year injury than it really was. I mean, that was a situation where I think if it had been a playoff type situation, a playoff caliber team, then, you know, Jaren's playing. Instead, they just said, you know, we're not going to risk our 19-year-old, you know, basically building block that we're going to look forward to having for many years here in a season that doesn't mean anything. And so, you know, it's a tough thing to say, but I you're going to tell me you're not Jaren Jackson Jr. isn't happy making $26 million playing professional basketball. I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah, the way
I said, and you get to your next contract a year earlier than signing a 5-year deal. You know,
well, the way I said it yesterday is, listen, I'm not going to act as if somebody is sacrificing by only making $105 million. But there was an opportunity for Jaren to go, nah, I'm gonna pass on this, you know, and it wouldn't have been mean spirited. There's plenty of sound financial people that would have said, hey, if you think you're going to have a big year, let's pass on this. Let's get the big one next time, you know, next summer. And that would have been completely reasonable. But both sides were willing to say, let's not let this become a thing and let's just have this season be the season. And I thought that was significant from both sides.
I think it's very significant because you obviously have a lot of decisions to make. And they kind of took some of the decision-making out of their hands when they traded Grayson Allen, who just signed an extension with Milwaukee, and I'm happy for Grayson.
Yep.
But they decided that Desmond Bain was a better fit for them moving forward. That's, you know, you had two of the same player. We talked about this, condensing the roster after the Utah series. We saw what Utah did. They condensed the roster. They have 9, 10, 11 guys, you know, 11 guys that they can truly go to. And then they have 4 guys at the end of the bench and 2 two-way players. And the 4 guys at the end of the bench are essentially guys that will bounce back and forth with their G League team and their big team with the two-way guys, and they try to develop younger guys there. And rather than have 13, 14 guys that need minutes or can take minutes and be productive, but if you have too many of them, you don't get them a rhythm, they said, all right, let's condense. We got 2 of the same guy. Let's trade one and, you know, try to bring a younger guy in and see if we can't develop him in Sam Merrill. And obviously, when we saw the rosters released, he earned a spot. I don't think it was just from one 30-point game in Indianapolis. Sam showed he can knock down shots in situations, and he's not afraid of the moment. Chris Dunn hadn't played. Chris Dunn has a track record. Sam Merrill did not. So there's a lot of things that go into it. You know, is Chris Dunn a guy you want at the end of the bench that's not playing and is probably going to be frustrated by not playing? At this point, obviously, the Grizzlies decided that wasn't what they wanted. So to lock Jaren up, to pick up the options on the other guys, we all know Ja's going to get the maximum that he can get. And as long as he's, you know, knock on wood, stays healthy and progresses this year. And then you've got decisions with guys like Brandon Clark, with guys like Xavier Tillman, with guys like Desmond Bane. You have decisions moving forward with those players, because now coming up right behind them, you've got Zaire Williams. They love what Santi Aldama has brought to the table. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't know much about Santi. I will tell you this, Jeffrey, I was blown away in Chicago, and I really had very little chance to interact with him. I had seen him on the plane, so he's already sitting down. He walked in the hallway, and I went, my gosh, this guy is a legit 6'11", like borderline 7-footer. I didn't realize he was that long. And even seeing him on the court, I didn't realize it until we were sitting courtside in Chicago, and I actually walked by him in the hallway, and I went, wow. You know, and he's got some muscle to his frame, more so than you would think at a kid his age. So they've done a really good job identifying young players, and now the problem with that can be young players want to get paid, and can you afford to pay all of them? And in the end, you really can't. And that was a dilemma teams that were building always would face. But I think the Grizzlies locking up Jaren and making that commitment to him says, we know who our building blocks are, and that's who we're going to stick with.
What are some areas I proposed a couple of thoughts about how the Grizzlies can improve without having to sit there and go, okay, well, if Ja and Jaren average, you know, 30 a game, like we said, if that can happen, we'll all take it and we'll start, you know, planning parades. But to me, it was really as simple as don't blow the double-digit leads again. And you're not going to always be perfect because the other team does get to make shots too, and I acknowledge that.
Sure.
But the Grizzlies had some really bad blown double-digit leads, the type of leads that you shouldn't blow. And then more importantly, I looked this up. Eric, this is the first time, last season was the first time the Grizzlies had made the postseason with a 500 record at home. I have to think the home record's simply just going to improve just by having an atmosphere again. And to me, those are very reasonable ways for the Grizzlies to get better.
I think you're right. Being back with them on the road, I recognize some things that are a little different with this group maybe than the grit grind years where guys were older, guys had their routines. They really keep these guys together.
Yeah.
They do a lot of team stuff, and you can see there's a good chemistry amongst them. Like, just the bantering and the joking around and some of the things I saw and heard, and I was like, okay, you know, that's really cool. The fact that all of them, whether it was the trip to Charlotte or Indianapolis, if I didn't see somebody, came back, said hello, and, you know, were saying, hey, it's good to see you guys back. You could tell there's a different feeling when teams get along. And I've seen teams that do, and I've seen teams that don't. And I think that helps going through the battles. And you're right. Look, there, I can neither confirm nor deny that on certain nights where there was an empty arena and maybe the team was on the road and a lead got squandered, Detroit, that there might have been some things yelled incredibly loud throughout the arena by not only me but by some others that could not be said on the air right now.
Yeah.
But it's also, we also realized at the time, hey, look, there is something to be said about knowing how to win in the National Basketball Association. And everybody that says, oh, what are you talking about? Then you don't understand. You just don't. And it's not meant to try to say we're cooler than you or we know more than you. You just don't understand. Like, there are young teams that struggle with finishing out games. There are teams that you face and you can see it. You can kind of see these elite teams. Milwaukee did it to the Grizzlies. Denver did it to the Grizzlies. The Lakers have done it to the Grizzlies. These teams that have veteran guys, 6-, 7-, 8-year pros that have been all-stars, that all of a sudden you hit that mid-third quarter, late third quarter, early fourth quarter, and they kick it up a notch. The one that sticks out to me the most last year was Toronto at home, and Nick Nurse gets tossed, and we even said on the air, it's a 12-point game right now, and Nick Nurse getting thrown out is either going to, A, inspire his team, and they're going to throw a haymaker at you right now, or B, it's going to make them go, all right, well, tonight's a wrap, let's fold it up.
Yeah.
Either way, you've got to come out and punch them in the mouth and see their response, and they did not. And it was the first of the two options. Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet get going, and the Grizzlies didn't stop it. They didn't have the answer. They started looking around for who's the guy. Well, now I think you know who the guy is. Now I think you know the guy is Ja Morant. But they have guys willing to take big shots, which is always good. But in those situations, they're going to have to turn to Ja to have him either score or set somebody up for a really good look and go with the results. And, you know, there's, like you said, there's going to be NBA games where or games where they don't finish off their opponent, where they give up a run, where they let a team back in the game. But there needs to be fewer of those than there have been in the last couple seasons, because now you're another year older. You're more mature. And I think there will be. I think you also have a head coach who now is also in his third year. I don't think enough onus was put on the fact that, hey, that guy's in his first 2 years of being a head coach. And he's making mistakes too. There were times, and you know how the court of public opinion is, hence why I don't really tweet or get involved with people on Twitter, because people, everybody's an expert. You know, if everybody could be an NBA coach and make, you know, seven figures running a basketball team, then I'm sure the line would be out the door and everybody would do it. But the fact of the matter is, not everybody can. In fact, guys work very, very hard to get that opportunity. So you thinking because you read every article and watch every game and played some high school ball, maybe even some college ball, maybe even some pro ball overseas, who knows, that you know more about the team than the coach that sees them every day is somewhat silly to me. But, you know, I get it. You're a fan, and I want fans to be passionate. We were talking about this. Would you rather have passionate fans or fans who legitimately feel like, you know, they don't care? Like, yeah. The apathy. You don't want apathy ever. And the fact that people care about this team, the fact that people take the time and start talking about what they think it should be, even if it's not always, you know, accurate in terms of what the reality is, I'm okay with that. I really am. You know, it's always going to be some sort. There's never going to be 100% approval rating. There's just not. I mean, even for the elite level teams, there's not. And so,
well, I mean, heck, we almost fired Budenholzer during the playoffs with a team that ended up winning a championship.
Yeah, well, you know, there's something to be said for maybe not just pulling the trigger on a guy's career that quickly because he had a bad day, you know. So again, it's one of those things where you go, all right, dude, like what can we do moving forward to improve this? And I think we've seen a lot out of this group where, you know, listen, Jeffrey, the simple fact of the matter is they're better this year. And it's a weird dynamic for me every opening part of the season, because I think so many times this team gets judged unfairly because people don't know a lot about them. You know, a lot of people outside the organization don't know a ton about them. They know, hey, this team is good, but they're not this or they're not that. No, yeah, by the way, this. But they really don't know as much. And experts are there for a reason, and the lines get set, and they're usually pretty accurate. But if we go back, I think, over the last 10 years, I would say the majority of the preseason predictions for the Grizzlies, that when they've had talent and players, they come in over the number. They come in over the number. They just do. They did during the grit grind years. They did. Even when that team would make runs in the playoffs, the next year they'd be like, oh, this is the year they take a step back. They're 44 wins, and boom, they're at 44 wins in March. And you're like, well, that was an easy bet. And I remember always thinking, gosh, am I being a homer when we would talk win prediction totals on a show we did every year with Chris and John Roser and Chris Harrington? And I'm like, no, I'm not being a homer. What I'm being is someone who believes this team is better than the experts believe. And maybe they're right, but I have a feeling I know the team a little bit better at that point. And so I look at 41.5 now, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that, because you can see where, you know, teams are basically going to be better than some expected. But I've always said this, like, this Western Conference is going to come down to a couple of things. One, who stays the healthiest? Two, whose young players develop and help them, and how chemistry is built with some new faces in places. And three, you know, scheduling. There's times where you just get on a schedule. Look at the Grizzlies' opening part of the schedule. My goodness. we're going to play Cleveland, and then you're off, and you get a four-game road trip that's a gauntlet because it's two sets of back-to-backs against four teams that people expect to be right in that mix. Now, the Warriors are expected to get a boost with the return of Klay Thompson, but as I said today earlier on an interview, what do we know what Klay Thompson's going to do? We're not talking about coming off one injury. We're talking about coming off two. We're talking about coming off a knee and then an Achilles. And I think it's foolish for anybody to expect him to be the exact same Klay Thompson right away. It's probably going to take half a season for him to get his sea legs. Now, he's such a tremendous shooter that maybe it comes quicker for him, but look at Wes Matthews. He ruptures his Achilles in Portland. That's the year the Grizzlies beat them in five games, and he was a big factor in the regular season series. And then he signs with Dallas. And for the first year in Dallas, Dallas fans are going like, hey, this guy sucks. He's not worth the money. He's not worth anything that he can, you know, that we're paying him. And I'm like, dude, he's off an Achilles injury. This isn't like a sprained ankle, stubbed toe, jammed finger. This is like major for a basketball player. That's why players fear it so much. So there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, I know I'm giving you a super long answer, but, you know, I think that the comebacks have to stop against you. The finishing out games, you have to be there. Making free throws down the stretch, you've got to step up and do that a little bit better. But, man, I'm excited. When this team had their main core out on the floor, and I know they played against teams that didn't have all their pieces either, but they did exactly what they're supposed to do. They dominated those times, and that tells me that they're ready. That they're ready to go, that this is a season where they want to prove to people that they belong in the conversation amongst the better teams in the Western Conference, let alone the NBA.
To wrap things up, what are kind of a few of the things that you're most interested to see with the team? You know, is it how Zaire Williams looks? Is it simply Ja and Jaren? I mean, what are kind of the things that you're looking to towards the beginning part of the season to kind of see how maybe this thing could go?
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people are looking at that draft pick with Zaire and saying, you know, hey, I don't. This may be a stretch. I see the things they've seen in him. And I see it. It's just going to take a little bit of time. I mean, you're talking about a kid that 2 years ago was playing in high school at Sierra Canyon and getting a lot of attention. He signs with Stanford. It's the most bizarre college basketball season you'll ever have. You don't ever play at home. You're in a state where the pandemic just basically tore it up. I know that because, one, I'm from there, and two, my daughter still lives there. And, you know, we talked about her the high school and what they were going through, and so, and what the colleges were going through, and where I called college football and basketball games and things they had to do. And I'm just like, wow, you know, no wonder this kid had an awkward freshman year for the level of talent. He's got moxie. So I'm not as keen on seeing that right now. And that's an old man word to say keen on something about seeing him right now. Cause I think that's a project with time. Same with Santi. My biggest thing seeing is, I kind of got a glimpse of it in the last two games that Jaren played. He looked terrific, looked confident shooting the basketball. Actually got fouled right in front of us, and I'll relay the what happened. And the guy doesn't blow the whistle. Jaren takes a three at the end of a quarter or something, and he doesn't blow the whistle. And Jaren gets up really frustrated, and you could tell the guy knew he missed the call.
Yeah.
And Taylor looks at him and goes, "Why is that not a foul?" Well, because he's not going to make the shot. And Taylor looks at him and he goes, "You're going to 100% guarantee me he's going to miss that shot, so you're not going to call the foul." And he kind of got this, oh, what did I just say look. And Taylor's like, "That's what I thought." And he goes, "He deserves more, and you got to be better." And I'm like, go get him, Taylor. Like, I was enjoying being courtside. So I like seeing that, but I like Jaren being confident to take that shot. The two things I'm looking for, the chemistry between Ja and Steven Adams, because if that gets there and it looks like it's getting there quickly, that's huge. And Steven is great. I heard in the same game him questioning referees about his teammates, like, what do you want him to do? The other guy initiated the contact. He's doing what he does. Don't pick on my guy. Like, this guy's been here like less than a month, and he's going to bat for his teammates. I love it. And then it's Desmond.
Yeah,
I think Desmond Bain has shown he has taken his game to another level. The work in summer league, being able to handle the ball and play make, was huge, and I really like what he brings to the table. So if those two guys can really fill those areas that we expect them to fill, and Ja takes the steps we expect him to take, and Jaren is back to the Jaren of old, I think people are underestimating this team, because I think people are skeptical about Jaren. I think people wonder what they don't really know much about, and they're not sure where Steven Adams fits in. But watching what's happened, Steven Adams loves where he's at right now. He seems rejuvenated, and that makes me very happy, because an unhappy Steven Adams terrifies me more than probably any other human being in the league, because he is just a monster. But when he's on your side, he seems to be very much a guy you want behind you.
Eric, we appreciate it, buddy. Good luck tonight. Or tomorrow night, beg your pardon.
Jeffrey, thank you, brother. I look forward to seeing you soon.
That is Eric Hasseltine. The Grizzlies and Cavs tomorrow night, the home and season opener. Pregame starts right here on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jessica Benson at 6:30. Eric has the call at 7.